Welcome to another episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show. I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
This is our Christmas episode. Merry Christmas, Mike.
Merry Christmas, Johnny.
For our last holiday horror special, Mike and I decided to discuss Scrooged.
Yeah.
From 1988. And we realize this is a little unorthodox for us because, well, it's not really a die-hard horror movie, but it definitely does have its elements in here, and we just could not pass up the opportunity to talk about this hilarious movie starring Bill Murray.
Yeah, and I
disagree with me?
I do disagree to an extent.
Yeah.
Because it is based off of A Christmas Carol, which I do not care. I will die on this hill. A Christmas Carol is a Christmas horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there.
Now, that's the black and white one, right?
A Christmas Carol's been redone about 875 times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's, you know, the original that came out in the 50s, I think.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. And that one, to me, has a very creepy sort of atmosphere to it.
Oh, yeah. It's got a very gothic feel to it.
Yeah.
God, I can't remember who played the part of Ebenezer in that. But, of course, then you got the Muppet Christmas Carol with Michael Caine, which is one of my favorites.
Oh, it's phenomenal. I love that movie.
Oh, it's great. And then you have the animated one with Jim Carrey, and then you have the one with Patrick Stewart, and then you have, you know,
all the other hundred of them.
Yeah, I'm sure that at one point in time I played in A Christmas Carol, and I don't even remember it.
It's been done so many times. I'm really excited about this. I've been looking forward to this since we decided to do this. Well, we decided to do this, like, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, because we were going to do something else, but we got talking about it, and we decided that this was the one to do.
We were just too excited about it. Couldn't pass it up. This is nostalgia for both of us.
Most definitely. I mean, this is a movie that both of us love dearly. Again, it's a yearly watch for both of us.
Since I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. You and I constantly bring this movie up, do quotes from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Bitch hit me with a toaster.
I love a girl with some spirit.
That is by far the best line out of this movie.
And it's got a great cast.
Oh, yeah.
You got, of course, Bill Murray, who plays Frank Cross. You've got Karen Allen as Claire Phillips, and she's been in, well, I remember her from the first Indiana Jones.
Yep.
And she's been in a lot of other movies, one of them in particular called The Wanderers. And of course, we've got the great Bobcat Goldthwait as Elliot Loudermilk. He is just so fun to watch in this movie. I laugh anytime I see him. I feel so bad for the poor guy throughout the movie, though. But it's great.
He has done so many great movies that I think are very underrated, like the movie Hot to Trot. More people need to know about that movie. It's freaking hilarious. He also directed a movie.
The one I told you about there, Willow Creek.
Yeah, Willow Creek.
Yes.
Which is a fantastic movie about Bigfoot.
It really is. And it's a found footage movie, which I don't particularly care for many of these movies. It's hard for me
really
to watch.
It's really well done, though.
I was really surprised at it. Me and my girlfriend sat down and watched it one night, lights off, really got into it. And there was some parts in here that were just downright creepy. It was good. And then, I found out later on that Bobcat Goldthwait was the one who, I think he wrote and directed and did everything for this movie. And it was a project he'd been wanting to do for a long time, apparently, he said.
Yeah,
and
good.
I'd highly recommend checking that one out if you haven't seen it.
And of course, he was in the Police Academy movies.
Yes, and I'm telling you, I feel old because I'll talk to certain people that have never even heard of those movies, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Even if you haven't seen them, you've at least heard of them. Bobcat Goldthwait was very well known for his character in those movies.
Yep. That's actually where I first got introduced to him.
Same here. And then, of course, we have Carol Kane, who's been in everything. And in this movie, she plays as the ghost of Christmas Present. And she is
she does.
Oh, she's just, it's hysterical to watch her in this. And, man, I mean, I can go on forever about the movies she's played in. I mean,
yeah, and TV shows everything else.
Right now, what's coming to mind is Tales from the Crypt.
What comes to mind as far as TV shows for her was You know, she played in Taxi.
Oh, right. Oh, my God. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, she played in Taxi, and she also played in the original... Oh, God, what was that movie? It was just in my head, and...
And you lost it.
Yep.
She's been in so many things, though, and she's such a terrific actress, and she's still working today.
Yeah. Don't Answer the Phone, maybe, is the one I'm thinking of that she was in. It's the only, like, actual horror film that I can remember seeing her in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's Don't Answer the Phone, which I own the movie, which kind of makes me bad I can't remember it. But
well, you own a lot of movies you can't remember and can't find.
This is true.
Yeah. You know, it's funny about this movie. I didn't know about this until, well, maybe a few years ago. Bill Murray and the director of this movie, Richard Donner, they reportedly didn't enjoy working together. They created a lot of tension on the set. Yeah. And when asked by film critic Roger Ebert, Ebert, that's it, if he had any disagreements with the director, Murray actually replied, "Only a few, every single minute of the day." That could have been, he stated that it could have been a really, really great movie. The script was so good. There's maybe one take in the final cut movie that is Bill Murray's, he said. And they made it so fast, and it was like doing a movie live, he said. And he was told by the director, he kept telling him to do things louder. And louder. And then Bill Murray actually said that he thinks that he was deaf. They really didn't get along through this whole movie. And Bill Murray turned down lead roles for this movie to make it because he loved the script so much and added a whole bunch of stuff into there. He thought it was a great idea. He actually turned down Rain Man. The movie Big, also from 1988, and Cocktail from 1988, to make this film. And I was just so shocked at that. I'm really, really happy that he did.
Yeah, I am too.
I mean, this movie wasn't the greatest when it first came out, and Bill Murray, he was so disappointed in it, and they just had so many disagreements.
Yeah.
He wanted to do things in a way different way than the way that this movie turned out, and he was really not happy with the result.
With Richard Donner being the director for this movie, it doesn't surprise me that I like it, because just about everything that he's done, I have really enjoyed.
What are some other movies he's done?
Richard Donner did Goonies.
Okay.
He, God, my brain.
Are you sure he did the Goonies? Because we just talked about the dude.
Chris Columbus wrote it.
Well, wasn't Steven Spielberg a part of Goonies?
He was the producer.
Okay.
If I remember correctly, Richard Donner was the director. Don't quote me on this. I could be way off.
Yeah, I don't have anything in my notes. I didn't get a chance to look it up, but... So I wasn't sure, like, what else Richard Donner did. I know him for this movie.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, he's done a ton of stuff, and my old brain can't remember any of it, so... But, yeah, fantastic director.
And we've all heard stories about Bill. You know, he's called the Murricane. Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, and I think Ernie Hudson, all at one point, back when he did Ghostbusters, all called him the Murricane. And Ghostbusters came out in, what, 84, I believe it
Something
was, or 85?
Like that.
And that was the last movie that Bill Murray did before doing Scrooged.
Right.
And Bill Murray was going to quit acting at this point until he got this script. He turned down a lot of stuff, and then he saw this one, and it really intrigued him, and he went for it. And I'm shocked he didn't quit after this movie, if he didn't like it so much, but... And over time, this movie came out great.
Yeah.
A lot was improvised, too. And you can tell.
Oh,
that
sure.
Scene at the end when he's, you know, he's back on the set
and
they start singing and he's walking around talking to all the people and everything. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is pretty much improvised, they said, by Bill Murray.
That doesn't surprise me.
And I can see it. Yeah. Yeah, I can totally see it. And it's just... Yep. A fantastic scene.
You go back to talking, you know, about Harold Ramis and Ernie Hudson and all that.
Yeah.
And saying stuff about Bill. If Ernie Hudson has something to say about you in any sort of negative light, you know you messed up, because Ernie Hudson is like one of the nicest guys on the face of the planet.
He truly is. I had the pleasure of meeting him at a horror con, and I got a... I'll never forget this. I have to bring this up. I got a picture with Ernie Hudson, not looking my best because I had crazy dad bod at the time. And I had a Munster shirt on that I was wearing that was cool, but you could see my fat gut. Other people say that they can't tell, but me, I can tell. That was a horrible picture. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, I met Ernie Hudson. I got a picture with him and my daughter. And my daughter at the time was only two to three months old. So, and she slept through the whole thing. But we got a picture with Ernie Hudson. He was such a nice guy. When he came out to his table, he stopped and talked to me and at the time my wife, and was just looking at our daughter in just awe and just amazement, yeah, and just talked to us and asked if we were waiting a long time in line, and that he's so happy that we came out and to wait for him. And, yeah, and it's just, he's such a nice guy. And I got to talk to him about a whole bunch of stuff. We had a good 10 straight minutes with him at his table.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I can tell you from seeing the picture, it does, it did come out really good. And
thanks.
Johnny's little girl is just absolutely adorable in it.
And Ernie Hudson, yeah, he, in interviews you've seen and anything, he's just a all around great guy. He's just really down to earth, and he really doesn't say anything bad about anyone. No. He didn't say much, like, anything particularly bad about Bill Murray, just the fact that he's known as the Murricane because, right, he's so unpredictable. And that could be taken in a million different ways, but I think we all know that he's hard to work with.
Well, I think in a lot of the ways he's a method actor.
Yeah.
And method actors, from what I understand, are really difficult to deal with at times, and that's putting it lightly.
Yeah. But Bill, I mean, in this movie is so...
He's so batshit crazy in this movie, and it's so great. I think Bill Murray is hilarious. There's not a movie that I can think of that he's done that I haven't at least liked his part.
Yeah.
He makes me laugh.
Mm-hmm. He's one of those actors that we grew up watching.
Oh, yeah.
He's done so many movies, and I'm excited to get into the plot of this movie, too.
I'm really
excited to talk about it. Let's get into it. This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
So it starts out at IBC Television, and President Frank, he plays Frank Cross, Bill Murray does, and he's pushing his company to broadcast this live production, this extravagant live production of A Christmas Carol on Christmas Eve, making the staff work throughout the holiday. This scene is so hilarious because he, well, like Mike just said recently, he's batshit crazy. He really is.
Yes, he is.
And the facial expressions throughout this whole movie, oh my God. And in this scene, there's one part where he's about to talk, mm-hmm, after he's shown the broadcast that they're going to, what they presented to him.
Mm-hmm.
He opens up his drawer, looks in the mirror, big smile on his face in the mirror, and then it shows him looking up with a very mean look on it. The subtle facial expressions throughout this movie with Bill Murray are just hysterical and just straight out like 80s, 90s type feel. It's
now
so
I have
great.
To kill all of you.
Now I have to kill all of you.
But he ends up, yeah, they end up, like, talking through this scene and figuring out what they're going to do. He wants to show a different version of A Christmas Story or some other broadcast. And
yeah,
it is it's pretty brutal. It's like
crazy.
It's like an action slash horror slash thriller or something.
Like horror
Christmas
fest.
Thriller. And it's got, I forget the guy's name. Is it the $6 million man?
Oh, Lee Majors.
Yeah. Yeah, he's in it, and he comes in and starts, like, protecting Santa and the elves because there's, like, these snipers or something, or these army, I don't know what. There's just people that are attacking, like, Santa's workshop or something, and Santa is armed with elves, and then this guy pops in and starts shooting up the place, and it's just, it's just really brutal. And then he shows some other, like, thing that he wants to broadcast with all of this, like,
violence
and killing,
crap,
bloody death. It's just brutal.
I mean, it's something that we would love. But,
oh, yeah, of course. But
you
for
know,
a movie
for the
like
general
this,
public.
And, yeah. And it's funny because Frank Cross, while, like, it's showing this, it shows Bill. I'm going to get this confused. Bill Murray, Frank Cross. So just know that. I'm going to get the names confused. But Bill Murray's facial expressions is just hilarious. He's having a great time watching this.
And he's
just
saying they're mimicking what it's saying on the TV, yeah, and stuff.
So after that's all done, the meeting's done, everybody leaves, and Elliot Loudermilk, who's played by Bobcat,
mm-hmm,
he talks to Frank Cross, and he's telling him that if he shows that, he's going to frighten people. And, oh, it's so great, man. We're not going to have enough time to talk about all these little details that I want to talk about, because it's just so, oh, I love this movie to death. He tells him that he can't show it because it'll frighten people. And Bill Murray looks at him and goes, do you think I'm a little tad off base here?
think I'm way off base here?
Yes, you're a tad off base, sir. That thing looked like the Manson Family Christmas special.
And Bobcat's like, yes, maybe a little. Maybe you can cut out the part with the gun and the blood and the...
and the guy shooting up. And I will tell you this. This is the most normal that Bobcat sounds in any movie he has ever been in, ever. And it is great.
Well, anyway, after that, Frank fires Elliot Loudermilk for disagreeing with him, pretty much, and sends cheap IBC monogram towels to people on his Christmas list, including his personal assistant, Grace, and his brother, James. He's a real dickhead in this, Bill Murray, but it's funny. He does it in such a fun way, you know, that's just ridiculous. While the powerful and influential people on his list are getting these expensive four-head hi-fi stereo VCRs, everyone else is getting towels that he doesn't really like. And for this time, and I actually looked this up, for this time, VCRs were expensive.
Oh, yeah.
They would go from like $800 to $1,000 to like really, really expensive, up to $5,000. That would be today. Yep. It's unbelievable because I had a VCR here like a few years ago. I couldn't get rid of for free. It's amazing how the times have changed.
Oh, God. I had a VCR last time I had one. It was, God, 10 years ago or more. I think I got it at the Dollar General for $10.
Wow. They had VCRs at that time?
Yeah.
Damn.
I was shocked.
$10. That's a good deal.
Yeah, I was very, very happy with it. I actually need to get a new VCR for all the VCR tapes that I have that I can't watch now.
And you probably couldn't get rid of if you tried. So yeah, so they're getting these expensive VCRs and stuff. Frank's boss then comes into the office. Preston Rhinelander? Is that how? I don't know. I don't think they say his last name, but it's
Preston.
Preston, yeah. And seeing the stress Frank is under with the production, he brings in this consultant, Bryce Cummings, to provide assistance, though Bryce secretly wants Frank's job, and it's so easy, and you can totally tell. This guy is a fucking cheese ball.
He is a kiss-ass.
Yeah, the actor who plays him, I didn't look up his name, but he's been in a lot of stuff, too, and he's a terrific actor. He's funny in this movie, and it just fits perfectly. The way that him and Bill Murray work together is it's so fun. It all looks improvised too. So the night before the show starts, and it's like this live, I don't think I mentioned, it's a live broadcast. Yeah, I did. It's a live production of A Christmas Carol. The night before this show starts, Frank's visited by the ghost of his mentor, Lou Hayward, an unloved miser who died from a heart attack 7 years before this.
And he looks like he did too.
He so does. The way that the makeup that this guy had to go through had to be just, oh my God, it had to be crazy. He looked so fucking like dead. I don't know how else to say it. It was gross. He had a rough 7 years of death, it just looks like.
Yeah. You look like you've only been gone for three tops.
Well, Lou shows up, and the way he shows up is great because Bill's in the Bill Murray, you know, Frank Cross, he's in his office, the doors are shut, and he's pouring himself a scotch or Bacardi or something.
Bacardi and Tab.
Yeah. Oh, God, Tab. Let's not get into that.
Yeah.
But he's pouring himself a drink, and there's a knock at his office door, and he says to come in, and nobody comes in, and he walks away from the door, and the doors start shaking, like, violently, and they're big black doors. They're, like, really, really tall, metal-looking doors, and they're shaking like crazy, and it looks like something is pounding its way through, and it's Lou. Lou is there to warn Frank that there's going to be three ghosts that are going to appear to him over the next day. We all know this story.
After Frank ended up unloading a revolver in him. Mm-hmm. And did you notice while he was shooting the revolver, he was going, bam, bam, boom,
bang, ba-bang, ba-bang, pow. And then Lou says, I don't care what you do to me, Frank. Just take it easy on the Bacardi. And as he drinks the Bacardi, he says, to old times, friend. And he drinks it. And where he got shot is the Bacardi coming out of him, out of the holes in his chest and everything. It's great. And as he's trying to warn him of these ghosts and everything, and he's trying to tell Frank to avoid the same fate that he had.
I'm warning you, Frank. Don't waste your life as I did mine.
Frank Cross is just totally, like, messing around, just making jokes and not taking it seriously. And it's Oh, it's so hilarious.
And let's not forget the golf ball that the mouse pushes out of the back of Lou's head.
Yeah. There's so many fun scenes in this. It's so great.
Great practical effects.
So before he vanishes, he grabs Frank. But, well, he's telling him to be prepared. And Frank is saying, geez, I'm not free that day. Maybe we can do next week. Maybe we can do dinner this week. And then he yells at him and he's like, this is your last chance, Frank. And Frank goes, okay, I could squeeze you in for a breakfast. Ghost gets really pissed off then and he picks Frank up by the throat. And he puts him through the glass window, almost like a Ghostbusters type thing. Mm-hmm. He just squeezes him through the window and his arm is breaking. And Frank's trying to hold on to his arm and gross decayed skin is flying off and it's just a bone. And then it breaks in half and Frank falls. And then Bill wakes up.
Yeah, Frank wakes up too.
So he wakes up and he's on his like lounger in his office. And the ghost apparently dials up Claire Phillips' phone number. He looks over and the phone is just dialing. And it turns out to be Frank's lost love from years ago, who is Karen Allen. Is that her name? The actress?
Yep.
And she plays Claire Phillips. So this is his long lost love. Claire comes to the network. Oh, I got to mention this. He looks around and he's like on the phone leaving a message because it got her answering machine. He says like, Something bad's really happened. I need to talk to you. And he's looking around and nothing's fine. Like his office is fine. No bullet holes in the Bacardi or anything. The doors are fine. And he's like, okay, maybe not. Maybe everything's fine. But just call me back. He takes a shot of the Bacardi or whatever was sitting there. And he takes out a golf ball out of his mouth that he thought was a piece of ice. Mm-hmm. And he drops it and then he passes out and faints. I love that part. So Claire comes to the network to talk to Frank. But Frank really doesn't make time for her. She returns to the homeless shelter after that where she works. But during this scene, it's so hilarious because he's just all over the place. People are bothering him for little things like the guy who wants to put the antlers on the little mouse's head. And Frank says, have you tried staples?
Yeah.
And Claire is like, staples? And she freaks out. And it's just, it's a nice little scene. There's a lot of comedy in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of emotion there because they were lovers years ago and Frank took a different road.
And Frank's screaming at them about hammering.
He keeps on saying, will you please stop the damn hammering? And at one point, like the third or fourth time he yells that, they're like, you got it. And something breaks and the whole freaking stage falls apart. And
yeah, and a piece of the stage falls right on the censor lady.
That poor lady.
She got the crap beat out of her.
Throughout the whole movie, something goes on with her. So as rehearsals start, Frank is visited by the ghost of Christmas Past, appearing as a maniac taxi driver. But before this part, he goes to lunch to meet Preston and also to introduce him to Bryce Cummings and to talk about how he's going to get help from him. Frank is already like freaking out because of the whole ghost thing and everything and the time. The
dude set himself on fire.
And yeah, I guess, oh God, there's not enough time to talk about all of these terrific moments. He's having a really bad, really bad business lunch with these guys because he keeps seeing things. And one of the waiters is serving a
baked Alaskan.
Bill Murray's like, look. And what Bill's seeing is something completely different from what everybody else is seeing. There's this baked Alaskan that's flaming. And Frank's vision, the dude's got his arm on fire and he's waving it around and freaking out. And he goes over and throws a bucket of water, like from the ice bucket, on him. And apparently that's like a Richard Pryor thing from the early 80s, I think. And he says it. He's like, you know, I thought you were Richard Pryor.
Well, yeah, Richard Pryor did set himself on fire.
He set him on fire when he was on cocaine.
No, he was doing a speedball, I think.
Yeah, well, whatever. It was but drugs. Yeah, he had a drug problem.
He was running down the street on fire, basically. But the part before where the dude was set on fire, he ordered a highball, and there was an eyeball in the glass.
He sees an eyeball, and he screams like a little girl. Nobody else is seeing this but him. So after he says a Richard Pryor comment, Frank walks out. Bill Murray falls on his way out of the restaurant, and this was unscripted, and it was a genuine accident, him falling. And you could so tell if you watch his feet. Yeah. As evidenced by the reaction of the actor who played the waiter and Murray's feet as he falls, you could see this. Apparently, it was due to the stairs still being wet after splashing the waiter with water, and it caused him to lose his footing. It really did. And his feet, like, kind of, like, go limp or buckle, and he falls right down. But the way he falls isn't, like, hard. It's, like, sort of a little bit of a tumble.
Yeah.
And it was... I'm glad that they left this in the movie because it's funny. It's so I rewind it every time. It's so great.
If they were to have ever done a remake of this movie, I think that if they got Jim Carrey to play Frank Cross, that would be freaking amazing.
Yeah, I could see that.
And it wouldn't be that big of a stretch because if you remember correctly, he played the voice of Ebenezer Scrooge in
A Christmas Carol.
Yeah. So yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Okay, so as the rehearsals start, and Frank leaves the restaurant after he falls, he's visited by the ghost of Christmas Past, and this guy is a maniac taxi driver. And apparently this guy, I didn't write his name down, but he's a very well-known musician, and yeah. He was a really good friend of Bill Murray's, and Bill Murray really wanted him to play this part, and he did.
He's played in other stuff.
Yeah, he has. I'll be damned if I can
remember his name, but...
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a very recognizable face, this guy, mm-hmm. And he's smoking a cigar, and he looks really banged up, and he's got teeth like a fucking donkey, and he laughs like one, too. It's great. But he takes Frank to see his past. It shows him how he had fallen in love with Claire, but lost her when he prioritized his television career over her, which was a really sad moment.
Frisbee the dog.
Yep. So there's just so much to talk about, God, yeah. And I really want to get into these specific parts, but we're already like a half an hour in. All right, so in the present, Frank goes to the shelter after seeing all of this. He goes to the shelter to see Claire, hoping to make amends. Instead, his attitude quickly sours, and he shows his contempt for a homeless man named Herman, and he then returns to the studio, but not before telling Claire, if you want to save someone, save yourself. He ends up missing Claire, and he goes to see her and everything, but the workers need Claire's help. I guess they're volunteers, mm-hmm. And these turkeys were supposed to show up for the homeless people. And before Claire leaves, she needs to help these two other volunteers because they apparently can't do it on their own. And Frank Cross gets really upset and very sarcastic at this part and says, these are two girls, two very big girls. They could handle it. And Claire being, you know, they're volunteers and they're helping out and she wants to help out. And she just tells Frank to wait a second so she can just go do this one thing really quick. And she said, don't bother. Take the rest of your life. If you want to save someone, save yourself. They're like this every day of the year. I guarantee it.
And this really gives some insight into the character about how not only is he so cold-hearted and hates the world, it also shows how damaged of a person he is to where he can't even hold the capacity for compassion for other people.
After this part, the Ghost of Christmas Present arrives. As an ethereal, sweet-voiced fairy.
And this is my favorite character out of this movie.
And it's played by... This character is played by Carol Kane, who punches, kicks, and slaps Frank to focus his attention. Even though his attention is pretty focused, she just pretty much does it to torture him, and it's great. But I got to tell you, when the Ghost of Christmas Present shows up, well, Carol Kane, there's a part in here where she grabs Bill Murray's lip. I don't remember what she tortures him so much. I don't know what's what, but there's a part where she grabs Bill Murray's lip. And she actually tore it so badly that the filming was halted for several days. And Carol Kane, she would get very upset at having to rough up Bill Murray in their scenes together. She actually would cry off set because she felt so horrible about doing it. Bill was totally cool with it.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a professional, and he understood, and he knew what was up. But Carol just didn't like it because she really did kick the shit out of him.
Yeah,
and I'm wondering about that toaster part, if that really did hit him, because it really did seem like a genuine hit to the face. But she takes him to Grace's apartment, showing his assistant's struggles to support her large family, including her youngest son, Calvin, who has remained mute since witnessing his father's death, which has completely understandable. Yeah. This kid is a really cute kid in this, and you feel so bad for him. And the ghost then shows him James spending a humble yet festive Christmas with a group of friends and his wife, Wendy.
Mm-hmm.
And James is Bill Murray's real-life brother, by the way.
Yeah.
He's a really good guy and all about the Christmas spirit, and Frank Cross is not. But James still defends Frank, despite Frank's cheap gifts, like a towel, and his refusal to share in Christmas celebrations with him and his family. So the ghost leaves him in a utility space under a sidewalk with Herman. And how she does this is the toaster scene, where she... they bicker, and they go at it, and they yell back and forth at each other. At one point, Frank pushes her and says, "Leave me alone, I know the answer to this." Because they're watching his brother James play trivia.
No.
Yeah, they play trivia, and he can't get this one question.
SS mackerel. The hell?
That part is so dumb because, I mean, come on. I mean, even I know that, and I didn't even, like...
I hate Gilligan's Island, but everybody knows that.
Yeah, but for the movie, and it worked for this part, too, because he's trying to figure it out, and the Ghost of Christmas Present is trying to get him to go, you know, saying that it's time to go, and she's like, let's go, and ends up pushing each other, and then I think she smacks him, or rips his ear or something, and then it shows her going, Oh, look at this. What gift is this? It's a toaster! And as she says toaster, she
uppercuts his ass with a toaster.
Uppercuts him with a toaster, yes.
Bitch hit me with a toaster.
And right when she hits him, he ends up in this utility space under a sidewalk where you see Herman. Herman was one of the homeless guys at the shelter.
Mm-hmm. The one who was trying to get him to do Shakespeare.
Yeah. They mistaked him for another actor, I think, or something.
He did Shakespeare, though, by God. He actually did very well.
Yeah, it was pretty... I laugh every time I see that because it's... he gets so into it and he's so mean, but in a very humorous type of way.
We did forget one part about when he goes into the shelter for the first time.
Oh, there's so many parts we're forgetting here, man.
When he's sitting there and he's talking to himself, and one of the volunteers comes up to him and is like, "Oh, we got a live one here," puts a blanket over him and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
If you guys can't tell, we love this movie a lot.
There's so many scenes. I could talk about this movie for days.
Oh, me too.
All the little specific details, and I feel like we're not doing it justice. Oh, God, it's just
because... But you say that every time, and we do, so...
I mean, we do all right, but man, this movie, it's got so much. Like, I feel like we need a good 3 hours to get everything in a rush, at least. So, okay, bitch hit him with the toaster.
That'll never be not funny.
And Frank is in this utility space under the sewers
with
Herman. And Herman finds to his shock, he's been frozen to death. He's sitting there with a little mysterious smile on his face, frozen to death, holding a
pocket watch,
a gold pocket watch.
And it starts playing.
Frank doesn't realize this until he walks up to him. And he's like talking to him and going, "Herman, maybe I should have given you the $2.
Now this part, especially after the whole scene with Carol Kane, this part was kind of a little bit jarring because it was, you know, really sad.
It was, yeah. It definitely has its moments throughout this. I mean, it's more of a comedy movie than anything else.
But it can have a bit of an emotional twist here and there. That this is the first part where you really kind of see that Frank does care, because he starts getting angry and he starts calling Herman a moron. You should have stayed in the shelter. They would have taken care of you. You know, you would have been warm. You would have been able to get something to eat.
You would have been a better caller, that's for sure.
That too. But yeah, so this was, I think it was a very big pivotal point in the movie of really showing that under all the bluster and, you know, rough exterior.
And anger.
Yeah, there is a good guy who does really care.
It's just taken him a while to get there.
Yeah.
And this next part, it goes right back into comedy. Frank desperately tries to escape this utility area.
He breaks through the door.
It leads to the back of the set of the production, and Preston directs Bryce to take over rehearsals to give Frank some time off. Frank looks like he's extremely confused when he breaks through this thing too. He like slips and ends up falling, I think, and then he hides behind one of like the carolers. Well, after this party, retiring to his office, Frank finds a drunken Elliot waiting for him with a shotgun, ready to kill Frank for firing him. And this part might be one of my favorite scenes.
Hello, Abbott.
And he ends up escaping into an elevator, but before he escapes onto an elevator, Elliot is shooting the place up, and he's drunk as hell. I gotta mention, throughout the whole movie, this poor guy, he gets fired, thrown out onto the street. While he's on the curb after he gets fired, you hear him talking to himself. Oh, honey, I'm thinking about moving to a studio apartment. I hope that's okay. You know, things like that. And you feel so bad for the guy.
And then
Whole time, he cannot get a drink of alcohol either.
Yeah, he gets splashed from a water puddle and then the booze.
From the taxi.
Yeah.
And he steals the booze.
Yep, the second time he steals the booze. The first time the booze falls through the bottom of the paper bag.
Which I thought was funny because when he breaks through the office and he's shooting it up and he's drunk as hell and he says he's blind, stinking drunk. How? He couldn't get a drink through the whole movie. I thought that was kind of funny. It's like, he didn't even
apparently he found a way to get drunk.
He found a way. But he's shooting up the place. And there was another funny scene where he points the gun at him. Frank ducks. And he shoots his trophies or something behind the glass case. And he yells, "My babies!" And he's screaming while running towards Elliot. And Elliot looks up like, oh shit, like he's going to attack him. But he doesn't. He runs
past him.
And every time I watch this, I'm like, you so had the opportunity to tackle him and take the gun from him, but instead you scream running out of the office like a little girl.
And then he gets in the elevator, and here comes the
Grim Reaper.
Yeah, the ghost of Christmas future.
Yep. He awaits, and Ghost takes him to the future where now Catatonic Calvin has been institutionalized, which is very, very sad. He's in like this white padded room, and Claire has heeded Frank's words and lives a decadent life after that, now viewing the homeless with disgust. So Claire goes the opposite route.
Yeah. Something always bothered me. Okay, so you know the part where Calvin's in there and Grace is in there. Why is she dressed up like with no shoes and the pauper's dress and the hood over her head and whatever? She looks like something out of freaking like a dystopian apocalyptic movie.
The shoes I can understand. I mean, he's in a padded room, so he could be suicidal. Shoelaces, nothing like that.
True.
Everything else, I have no idea.
It was just really odd.
It might have been just for dramatic effect.
It could be.
Really did. It really was a dramatic scene. A really, really sad scene.
Yeah.
And Claire heeded Frank's words, and she looks terrible. She's pale as fuck.
She's a bitch now.
Like, they definitely powdered her face. Mm-hmm. You can tell, because she's like pure white.
Wow,
and
she
wears,
look like that in real life. Good
she
Lord.
She wears way too much makeup. She looks like...
she looks like a damn vampire.
She reminds me of one of the chicks out of Death Becomes Her, which is another movie we will eventually get to.
You know who she reminds me of? Duchess from Once Bitten.
What Duchess? Oh my God! Yes, a little bit. Yeah, because the way she's dressed, it's very like I'm rich and I want to show off.
Mm-hmm.
And she's wearing like a really big hat, a veil over her face, I think, right?
Yeah, like a little black veil kind of hanging down. And just so you guys know, we are going to be doing Once Bitten eventually.
But Claire, she's sitting there and there's these like kids that are begging for food, and she tells them to scram and mentions that she had someone that gave her some really good advice long ago. She's telling this to her friends that are sitting there with her because they're like, oh, Claire, come on. They look so helpless and hungry and they're homeless. And Claire says, if you want to save someone, save yourself. And then she looks off into the distance and says, what does she call him? Lumpy?
Yeah.
That's a nickname because she ended up bashing his head in at like with a door or something a couple times.
So she smashes him in the head with the door and then he falls back. And the back of his head hits the sidewalk.
Yep. And she says, that's going to be quite the lump. So I guess like they call him Lumpy.
Mm.
That's her nickname, a cute little nickname. So she looks off and she says, thanks, Lumpy. After she says, you know, if you want to save someone, save yourself. So she's turned into this like really self-centered bitch, pretty much. So finally, the ghost shows Frank's cremation ceremony with only James and Wendy in attendance, and it's so sad because at first he thinks that it's James's like cremation funeral or whatever.
And I will tell you one thing.
It's not.
This part, when I was a kid.
Oh, it's terrified me.
Freaked me out. Still to this day, the thought of.
Well, claustrophobia, fire, being cremated, you know, and showing the inside of the coffin that's being lowered into, or.
Being pushed into pushed the fire. Pushed
into the fire. Yeah. And
him in there kicking and screaming.
Yeah. And frightened and remorseful, Frank's further shocked to find himself in the casket as it's about to be incinerated. He breaks his way out, ending up on the elevator back with Elliot Loudermilk. He's so elated to be alive.
I'm alive!
And it's playing the hallelujah music as he says this. He is oblivious to the fact that Elliot is still trying to kill him, too, and he's got a gun.
I'm alive, and so are you.
He walks over to him. He's like, hey, is that a gun in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? Or is that a shotgun, or are you just happy to see me? And he throws it, and the gun goes off. And Elliot is looking terrified, and he's just wide-eyed about the whole thing, wondering what the hell's happening. It's so funny. Frank's completely changed his demeanor, and he just surprises Elliot, particularly when Frank offers him a high-level executive position, too.
But first, you need to take a bath, because you are rank, little man.
He ends up kissing him. He gives him raspberries, which is what Carol did to him, the when they were at Christmas present.
Yeah, when they were at Grace's apartment.
Yeah, because they give... They start giving, like, their. She gives her son raspberries.
Yeah.
So then, like, she starts doing it to Bill, and Bill's like, more, more, more. And then she said something about, oh, they're so cute and so poor. You, what is she? She smacks him in the face, and she's like, it's so poor. And he's like, I think she's due for a raise. Maybe. Possibly. I'm quite positive. And he's, like, crying. And
well, she's smacking the shit out of him.
I know. It's so great. It's so great. So with Elliot's help, Frank returns to the production set and secures Bryce in the control room.
He said he never felt that way about a man before, but he really liked you in a certain way.
And breaks into the show's live broadcast to speak of his new appreciation for life. And this was the part that we were talking about earlier, where it's all improvised.
It's great. It's absolutely fantastic.
It really is. It's such a bright and happy, as well as goofy and hilarious moment.
It's Christmas Eve. It's the one night of the year when we all act a little nicer. We smile a little easier. We share a little more. For a couple of hours out of the whole year, we are the people that we always hoped we would be.
He apologizes on air to Grace, James, and the cast and crew, and makes a very passionate plea to Claire to come back to him. Claire sees this at the shelter and heads for the network with the help of the taxi driver, the ghost of Christmas past. She's asking, you know, do you know how to get to so and so and so? And he goes, which floor? So yeah, Claire sees this at the shelter, and she heads to the network. And Frank and Claire, they then reunite, and he brings her on TV. And it's a great scene. Calvin comes up to Frank and speaks for the first time and reminds him to say the words, God bless us, everyone, at the end there, much to Grace's elation.
Yep.
Frank leads the crew in singing, Put a Little Love in Your Heart. Sees Lou and the three ghosts and the ghost of Herman smiling and waving back to him while singing along.
Yep.
And, you know, everything's all good. He got his second chance, and it pretty much ends with this song. And this part goes on for a good, 15, 20 minutes.
Very heartwarming. A very, very, very good way to end the movie.
And he does some hilarious things. He holds up mistletoe kissing one of the dancers. he picks up, or he grabs one of the babies from the people that are in the play, and he pretends to drop it, and he's like, oh no, oh, it's just fake, I'm just kidding, it's okay, and he's yelling out, you know, it's time to party, come on, this is Christmas, and he's so loud and just out there. Call the agent,
There's also a great Easter egg at the end when he starts saying, "Feed me, Seymour."
Yep, the "Feed me, Seymour" part, because after the song, he's talking to the camera, and it's a good little nod to Little Shop of Horrors, because he played in that with, well, it's the part with Steve Martin, the dentist, one of the very famous scene in that movie that's... That's probably my all-time favorite scene in Little Shop of Horrors.
Candy bar!
And, you know, anytime I go to the dentist now, I think of that part.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's comforting, you know? He's just getting off on pain, or it doesn't even hurt.
And royally pisses Steve Martin off.
And he's just trying to hurt him after that, and it doesn't work, and he just tells him to leave. Oh, such a great movie.
Some people are just sick.
But, yeah, so he says to the camera, "Feed me, Seymour, feed me." Just going completely just crazy. It's such a fun part. But I'm telling you, we didn't even put a dent in half the things I wanted to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much in this movie, and I would 100% recommend this movie to anyone, especially around Christmas time.
Yep. This movie just makes me happy. This is Christmas for me.
Yeah, me too.
My Christmas starts, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Usually Christmas Eve, I'll watch this movie, and then Christmas Day, I'll watch A Christmas Story. And this is, I've been doing this years and years and years and years.
With that being said, let's get into our ratings.
10.
That's it. I could have wrote up so much stuff about this, but we would have been here all day. And it's easily a 10 for the nostalgia factor, for the great acting, which is surprising due to the fact that him and, what's his name, Richard Donner, the director, they had so many disagreements and it didn't turn out the way he wanted it to turn out, not even close. Bill Murray.
Yeah.
You know, years and years later, you know, here we are, 2023, almost 2024, talking about this movie from 1988. To me, it lives up to today. It still does. With a lot of these scenes, it's still such a great movie, great acting. There's a lot of great actors in this movie. The cinematography was very well done for this time.
The practical
time.
Effects were...
Oh, absolutely.
Fantastic.
They were spot on.
And in case you guys didn't know, we love practical effects.
Yes, I don't think we've said that in every episode. But yeah, it's a 10. And we cannot say enough great things about this fantastic film.
Now on the Gore-O-Meter...
Yeah.
This gets half a star from me.
A half a one.
Yeah. And the reason being is because there's, like...
There's no gore in this by any means.
The goriest part is the part where, with the Ghost of Christmas Future, where Frank opens up the robe and there's all these little demon critters in his rib cage and whatever.
And even then, it's funny.
Yeah.
You know? So the way he opens it up and looks at it and then closes it.
Yeah.
And then takes a second and thinks and then looks at it again.
I guess a half a star for that.
Yeah, I think I would give it that too. But really, there's no gore.
The reason I give it a half a star for that is because it reminds me of something out of Hellraiser.
Yeah, actually. Now that you mention it. A little bit, yeah.
But then at the end part when they're all singing and you see the Ghost of Christmas Future up there.
It's
and
goofy.
All the little goofy, all the little critters are wearing like Christmas hats and have candy canes and stuff.
And they're singing along.
Yeah.
It's goofy. Yeah, but it's cute great. And funny.
But yeah, this movie is just probably one of my favorite, not just Christmas movies, but one of my favorite movies, period. I mean, hell, absolutely. I'll watch this in the middle of July if I'd, you know, get the notion to do it.
There are times I do watch this throughout the year. I mean, it is a Christmas movie, but this is one of those movies that you don't have to just watch during Christmas to enjoy it.
I think the first time you and I watched this movie together, actually, it was like freaking July or August or something.
Yeah, it might have
like
been summertime because I think I was getting an itch to watch this movie again.
Yep.
It's just a Bill Murray movie, Christmas movie, but yeah, just you could watch it at any time.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I wanted to mention, because this isn't releasing until after Christmas, but it is our Christmas episode.
Yep.
And as we're recording this, We have not released Violent Night yet. It's been finished. It's just taken a little bit of time because of the holidays. So we do apologize for those who waited a little bit of extra time.
It's definitely going to be worth the wait, though. It's going to be a great episode.
Yeah, but we do apologize for that because usually we're right on time releasing weekly shows. So I wanted to just mention that if anyone's wondering what happened with Violent Night. If you didn't know there was a Violent Night and you're because, you know, a lot of people skip, I highly recommend going back to listen to that one because we had a fucking blast talking about that. It was a very good time. Every show's a good time, but one in particular, you know, our that was our third installment of the Christmas episodes that we were doing.
And starting next week, we got a big surprise for you guys.
We can mention it. We're going to be doing the Universal Monsters, and we're going to be doing it in order as kind of a trilogy.
Tribute.
We're going to be doing the Universal Monsters, not all of them because there's way too many. But
we'd
we're
be here until this time next year if we did all of them.
I think there's 6 movies that we're going to be doing out of Universal.
Six or seven. Like
so all month of January and most of February is going to be the Universal Monsters
episodes. So definitely tune into that because it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, this is something we've talked about for a long time. So if you love Universal Monsters, you're definitely going to want to check these out. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about these, and there's going to be a lot of stuff to say about them.
These episodes about the Universal Monsters may run a little bit longer than usual, just because, I mean, these are the foundation of the movies we love today.
Yeah.
So
they get a lot of credit. And if it weren't for these movies and directors and all the people that worked on this, there would not be a lot of movies that have come out today. There would not be a lot of great horror movies. And even not horror movies. I mean, Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, all of them have ended up somewhere at some point. Not even just in horror.
Horror, comedy, action, horror, action, comedy, horror, you know.
You see them everywhere. You see them around Halloween time everywhere. Mm-hmm. They are just like a staple.
Definitely tune into those and you won't regret it.
Well, we also would like to send a special shout out to a Jessica Hartman. She left a very positive review on the Apple podcast. So we just wanted to send a shout out to you and a huge thank you. We really appreciate you listening and hope you keep listening. And anyone that's says anything positive to us or leaves a comment, we really, really do try to send a shout out to you.
Yes, we do. And big thank you, Jessica. And we hope you continue to enjoy the show.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, as long as you guys keep loving it, we'll keep doing it.
No, we're going to keep doing it anyway. If no one's listening, we're doing it. We don't care. We've got nothing else better to do. This is one of our, I think I could speak for Misfit Mike here too, when I say that this is a passion for us.
Oh yeah.
Most definitely. Movies just are just our thing. I grew up watching movies.
Same here.
It's just a really big deal for us. And we love talking about them.
Oh yeah. And the fact that you guys seem to be enjoying listening to our two goofy asses ramble on.
Yeah.
Makes it all worthwhile.
You got any last words about Scrooged, Mike?
Watch it. Watch it now. If you haven't seen it, go out, buy it.
Even though when you listen to this episode, it's probably not going to be Christmas, still, watch it.
Yes.
It really is a fantastic watch.
Watch it. You'll love it. I guarantee it.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Scrooged. This completes our 16th episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show.
Yeah.
And the last of our holiday horror specials for this month. So thank you guys for listening. And remember, you can listen to our previous episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, iHeart, and more. If you have any suggestions or requests, please check out our Facebook page and shoot us a message, comment, at least give us a like, and remember to rate us.
Yep, and just as a special shout out to everybody, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Don't forget to lock your doors and windows, check the closet, and look under the bed. Until the next time, I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
Mike, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, bud.
And always remember,
keep the horror alive.